Good evening, everyone. Welcome to our new course. And this is an amazing course, Book Smart. You know, sometimes people say they're smart, and you don't know what smart means. Are they smart because they have a good head? Are they smart because they're street smart? Or are they smart because they're book smart? Now, if someone has a good head and doesn't use it, so what's worth being smart? But if you have a good head and you look it in the books, then you talk a book smart. Not just smart, but book smart. So, something very interesting about this course, which is the first time that we have a course like this ever, but it's something that people always ask constantly the same question. They get very confused. When you say the Torah, what do you mean the Torah? What's the Torah? So we learn Talmud. Is that Torah? We learn Mishnah. Is that Torah? We learn law in the Torah. Is that Torah? Or is the Torah the five books of Moshe? What is Torah? So that's number one. Number two, we're going to cover in this lesson is the truth is Torah was given to us 3,334 years ago, almost 3,335. In your booklets you have a time calculation, a manual of the entire thing. On the PowerPoint also we'll have it. But if you look at it, there is a whole, let's put it into six categories, okay? There is Tanakh. What is Tanakh? Tanakh is Torah, Nevi'im, and Ksuvim. English, the Torah, the five books of Moshe, prophets and writings. Altogether 24. These 24 books are called the written Torah, Tanakh. However, there's a difference between the five of Moshe and the other 19. But they were written from Moshe through the destruction of the first temple. It's like 1,000 years. You have these 24 books that were written. It's called the written Torah. In a span of 1,000 years. Is that clear? However, then goes the second part of the Torah, we call the oral Torah, which is Medrash. Anyone familiar with Medrash? What is Medrash? What is Medrash? Could you define a book called Medrash? What is Medrash? Talmud. What is Talmud? Kabbalah. What is Kabbalah? Halacha. Musar. Chassidus. This is all included in Torah. So, this course, which is a 6-week course, is going to cover the entire Torah. The written, which is Tanakh, the 24 books, and we'll go through tonight about those 24 books and which book each one represents, and the oral Torah. The difference is also, the written Torah was written over a period of 40 years. From when Moshe took the Jews out of Egypt and got the Torah till Moshe passed away, it has 80,000 words in the written Torah, the five books of Moshe. How much is 80,000 words? Not a lot. It's like a nice big novel, you know. Lahavdil. And who wrote this five books of the Torah? One individual, Moshe. And it was a period of 40 years. The oral Torah is 120,000 books, the oral Torah, and it's a period of, let's go, almost 3,000 years, and made by many authors in different times, and it's all called Torah. So it's confusing. Is the written called Torah, the oral? Now, there was a famous CEO of the biggest company in the world. It used to, I don't know if it was Amazon, whatever it was. And he was supposed to give a very special talk to all his shareholders. But he didn't have time to prepare his speech. So he asked his closest, right-hand person to write his speech for him and tell him to make a lot of jokes and make it interesting so the people, all the shareholders, will listen. So the guy worked on it and prepared him a beautiful speech, and the guy said the speech, and then he gets a call, the one that wrote the speech, from the CEO, very upset. He says, "Why are you so upset?" He said, "The first 15 minutes, everyone enjoyed. The jokes, the humor, the intelligence, the depth, the broadness, it was amazing. The second 15 minutes, people started to walk out of the room." So it was something went wrong. He says, "Well, I'll tell you the truth. When I prepared your speech, I was afraid you were going to lose the speech, so I made two copies, and you read both the first copy and the second, so people heard already the first 15 minutes, and you repeated everything you said in the first 15 minutes, but he had two papers, so he read it. The oral Torah and the written Torah, how do they match? How does it match together? Is it both all from God? Or is it a repetition? Or is it a copy? What is it? What is the going about the oral Torah?" So I just told you now about the five books of Moshe, which is 80,000 words. However, the Nevi'im Uksuvim, the Tanakh, is 24 books. It's 1,000 years, the era of the prophets, and it has a volume of about 1,000 pages. I'm sorry I didn't have it, but there's a book over there in the library of Art Scroll that they have the entire Tanakh, the whole 24 books in one volume. It's around 1,000 pages. And this was written over 1,000 years, but we'll get to it in a few moments, the difference. Now, another interesting thing, oral Torah was not allowed to be written. So in other words, when you have that whole bookcase over there in my back, the whole bookcase is the Talmud. It's like 70 volumes. The whole bookcase over there is all the Kabbalah, Chassidut. That bookcase is all the law of the Torah. That bookcase is Maimonides. Medrash is the Mayam Loas on the top two shelves. All those books were supposed to be oral, wasn't supposed to be written. So the first, let's say, 1500 years from when we got the Torah, the whole oral Torah was all transmitted from teacher to student. It was all in memory. After 1500 years, Rabbeinu Yehuda Hanasi said that now it's time to take the whole oral Torah and write it, because people's minds were starting to forget. But we still refer to it the oral Torah. So all these books that are printed, we call it the oral Torah. The only part that we call the written Torah is the 24 books of the Tanakh. And in those 24, the first five is unique, that Moshe wrote it, And the other 19 was prophets, other prophets after Moshe, after the Jews entered Israel. So till today, the Torah is split in two, even though everything today is written and printed. But the 24 books, that we call the written, and the nine, and everything else we call, which is 120,000 books, is oral Torah. So is the oral Torah from God?
Yes.
Is the oral Torah, is it God that gave it at Mount Sinai? So we're going to get to that in this lesson. And the last thing is, we're going to discuss the difference between the 5 books of Moshe and the 19 books of the prophets and so on. So if you turn to page, where is it? Page 7. You have page 7 in your book? You see page 7?
Yes.
Okay, in page 7, you could see on your page, you see the top 5 is the 5 books of Moshe. Then you have the prophets. Then you have the writings. You see it? These are all written, these are all called the written Torah, 24 books. Now, if someone asks you a simple question, and this is very interesting, if I want to put the Tanakh in a library, which section in the library would I put the written Torah? Besides the religious section, would I put it in history section? Would I put it in literature? Would I put it in ethics? Would I put it in philosophy? Psychology? What would I put the Tanakh in, which section? If I'm a librarian, where would it fit? Who said all of them? She's right. Because the Torah is not just a history from creation till the destruction of the first temple. The Torah is law. The Torah is philosophy. The Torah is psychiatry. The Torah is history. The Torah is poetry. The Torah is ethics. The Torah is everything that you need for life. That's why it's called the Living Testament. That's how you can live. Every philosophy that is in the Torah, every law is in the Torah, every history is in the Torah, everything is there. So the Torah can fit anywhere. So of course, that's where we get the 613 mitzvahs in the Torah, but everything is there. As you see in text 2, look in text 2 on page 20. Who's going to read text? Edward, you want to read?
Of course.
On page 20.
On page 20?
Page 8.
Okay. Yeah. Text 2 on page 8, Encyclopedia of Life. Delve and delve into it, for all is in it. See with it, grow old and worn in it, do not budge from it, for there is nothing better.
So everything is in the Torah. You want to just have to turn it inside out and you find anything in it. So what we're going to do before we go into the 3 parts of the Torah, I just want you for a few minutes to watch the video that will actually explain the timeline of the This?
Yeah, go back for more, because it's not going to play otherwise. Go. Yeah, now go forward and just...
Okay.
Book, the Jewish Bible, the Tanakh. No book has had a greater impact on human history, on human civilization. No book has been more devoutly read, more diligently studied, more deeply probed. What's in the Tanakh? Who wrote it? Or transcribed it? And when? Join us for a journey that spans thousands of years. A journey traversed by shepherds and kings, prophets and prophetesses, scribes and seers, as we explore the 24 books, the 929 chapters, and the 22,864 verses that comprise the Jewish Bible. The Tanakh consists of three components: Torah, Nevi'im, or prophets, and Ketuvim, or writings. The first section, Torah, is the most fundamental text of Judaism, transcribed by Moses during the 40 years that the people of Israel were traveling through the wilderness. This is the text inscribed in the Torah scroll, the most sacred object in Judaism. The Torah consists of five books, the five books of Moses, also called the Chumash. The Torah recounts the origins of the Jewish people, but even more importantly, it contains the 613 mitzvot, divine commandments, that define our mission in life and the covenant between God and the people of Israel. The book of Genesis describes the creation of the world and the formative events of early human history. Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, Cain and Abel, Noah's flood, the Tower of Babel, and the lives and deeds of the founding fathers and mothers of the people of Israel: Abraham and Sarah, Isaac and Rebekah, Jacob, Rachel and Leah, Joseph and his brothers. Genesis also includes the seven Noahide laws and three of the 613 mitzvot of the Torah. The book of Exodus describes the exodus from Egypt, the giving of the Torah at Mount Sinai, and the construction of the tabernacle. It includes the Ten Commandments and 101 other mitzvot. The book of Leviticus records 247 mitzvot commanded by God to Moses pertaining to the temple service, the kosher dietary laws, the festivals of the Jewish year, and a variety of ritualistic, social, and civil laws, including the maxim, love your fellow as yourself. The book of Numbers recounts the events of the Israelites' 40-year journey through the wilderness. It also includes 52 mitzvot. The book of Deuteronomy contains Moses' final address to the people of Israel before his passing. It reviews many of the events and laws of the previous three books, as well as 200 additional mitzvot. A Jew lives with the Torah 365 days a year, and the five books are divided into 54 sections, or parshiot. Each week, another parsha is publicly read in the synagogue, and each parsha has seven sections so that each day of the week has its distinct lesson of the day to study and apply to our lives. The eight books of the prophets section of Tanakh record the words and deeds of the prophets who brought the word of God to the people in the centuries after Moses. The first four books in this section are primarily historical, recounting the events from the children of Israel's settlement of the Holy Land to the destruction of the first temple. The book of Joshua describes the conquest of the Holy Land and its apportionment among the 12 tribes of Israel. Judges describes events during the 14 generations of the judges who led the people of Israel in the centuries after the passing of Joshua. The book of Samuel recounts the lives and deeds of the prophet Samuel, King Saul, and King David. And Kings recounts the history of the kingdoms of Judah and Israel. Isaiah was sent by God to convey prophecies of consolation over the destruction of the Holy Temple and the exile, and to describe the future messianic age of peace, perfection, and divine revelation. Jeremiah warned that Jerusalem will be destroyed because of people's sins and injustices, but also conveyed the promise that the exiles to Babylon will return after 70 years. Ezekiel described his vision of the divine chariot that is the source for many of the mystical teachings of Kabbalah and of the third holy temple of the Messianic era. The last book in the prophets section is composed of 12 smaller books recording the prophecies of 12 prophets. Hosea, who God instructs to marry an unfaithful woman in order to experience firsthand God's interminable love for his people despite their unfaithfulness. Amos, who denounces the exploitation of the weak and poor by the rich and powerful, and speaks about the hypocrisy in serving God while failing to practice justice and charity. The story of Jonah, which teaches the power of prayer and of repentance. Joel and Nahum, who foretell the divine judgment of the nations who persecuted the people of Israel. Obadiah, Micah, Habakkuk, and Zephaniah prophesy the future messianic age of peace and perfection when all nations will unite to serve God. And the last three prophets, Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi, encourage the people during the difficulties of their return from Babylon to build the second temple. The words of the prophets are also incorporated into the annual Torah reading cycle in the form of the Haftorah, selected portions from the prophets which we read after the public Torah reading on Shabbat and other special occasions. The third section of Tanakh, the writings, include 11 books composed by King David in the Holy Land some 3,000 years ago. The Psalms of the Book of Tehillim express the yearnings, tribulations, and exaltations of the Jewish experience in every land and in every generation. Psalms form an integral part of every Jewish prayer and are read, wept, and sung at every occasion from a birth to a funeral. Whenever a Jew has the need to plead for divine assistance, celebrate a triumph, or simply talk to God, the verses of Tehillim give voice to the outpourings of his or her soul. Also in the writing sections are three books containing the wisdom of King Solomon. Proverbs contains aphorisms on the virtues of wisdom, hard work, and a moral life. Song of Songs is a pastoral love song that metaphorically describes the relationship between God and Israel. Ecclesiastes speaks of the transience of life and the futility of worldly pursuits. Also in the writing section, the book of Job confronts the question, why do the righteous suffer? Ruth tells the story of the Moabite princess who converted to Judaism and became the ancestress of King David. Lamentations mourns the destruction of the Holy Temple and the exile of Israel. The scroll of Esther recounts the story of Purim, when Haman's plot to annihilate all the Jews in the Persian Empire was foiled by Queen Esther and Mordecai. The visions and deeds of Daniel, a Judean prince who served in the royal courts of Babylonia and Persia, are in the book that bears his name. Daniel also prophesied on the rise and fall of nations and the timing of the Messianic redemption. Ezra Nehemiah describes the Jewish people's return from Babylon, the reestablishment of their commitment to the Torah, and the building of the Second Holy Temple. Chronicles contains a summary of the whole of biblical history. Five of the books of the writings section, also called the Five Scrolls, are publicly read in select times of the year. The Scroll of Esther on Purim, Ruth on Shavuot, Song of Songs on Passover, Lamentations on Tisha B'Av, and Ecclesiastes on Sukkot. 1,000 years after the revelation at Sinai, in the first generation of the Second Temple era, the 120 prophets and sages of the Great Assembly canonized the 24 books of the Tanakh. This is the written Torah, upon which all subsequent Torah learning and discussion is based.
Is it clear or no?
Who is that?
It doesn't make a difference.
I'm just curious.
Oh, a Jewish guy, Rabbi Ross.
No, it's beautiful speaking.
Okay. Do you get the idea a little?
Of course.
Okay. Today, we're going to cover the Tanakh and a little of the connection of Tanakh and the... Let me, a little lower. I got too loud. The connection between the Tanakh and the Oral Torah. So I want to ask you a question. Now that we know, if you see on page page 8, you have the five books of Moshe, right? That's the Torah. Nevi'im, the prophets, and the Ketuvim, the writings. That's called Tanakh. Why are they divided in three? In other words, why is Torah called, the five books of Moshe called Torah? And the prophets is called Nevi'im, and the writings called Ketuvim. Why isn't it, if it's all part of the written Torah, it should all be called Torah? Why is it split in three categories? And the answer is very important. It was, each category is a different level of how this was communicated with the human beings. So the five books of the Torah, which Moshe wrote, wasn't a prophecy. A prophecy is when God speaks to humans. When I mean speak, it's not like me speaking, it means revealing himself in a human mind. That's a lower level than the Torah. Torah is above prophecy. Torah is Moshe writing the words of God directly. In other words, when Moshe spoke to you, it wasn't him speaking to you. He was just a funnel. It was God's voice through Moshe's throat. Moshe's words that were written, the five books of Moshe, the Torah, were not that he had a prophecy in his mind, and then he wrote it. That was the next section, the prophets. Moshe, what he wrote was, he was like almost like a secretary that is dictates, the author is dictating word for word what to write. So for Moshe, his experience wasn't a prophetic experience where God reveals himself in the mind, and then he takes that message and he writes it down. He was writing the word for word that God put in to write. He was almost like God saying, write Bereshit. Bara, the first word of the Torah, Bereshit, in the beginning. Creation. All the next section, which is the prophets, was more that they had a prophecy, a vision, and then they wrote that in the book of prophets. So it was more how it was seen in their mind. So for example, if you read Yeshayahu or Yirmiyahu, Isaiah or Yirmiyah, it's a different, they could be saying the same message, but each one is saying it from their perspective. Yeshayahu is always encouraging, always positive, always saying, we're going to return, we're going to build Israel again, we're going to build Jerusalem again. Yirmiyahu is more the bitterness. You get kicked out, exiled. Moshe Rabbeinu, when he wrote the Torah, it's not something he visualized in his mind. It was a direct from God that he was just like the secretary writing. It didn't go through him in the sense that it became him. It went through him as a funnel. It's almost like God didn't have a hand and needed a hand to write. And Moshe was that hand. You get the difference or not? So when you have a prophetic vision, it's an experience. You see the God and you feel this great aura and you see this vision, and then after you internalize it, you write it in the words of, you know, what you just experienced. That's the prophets. Moshe, there was no vision of this. It was purely just a funnel. It's like me talking to you. I'm giving you face to face. So Moshe was a much higher level. That's why the Torah, every word in the Torah is God in the five books of Moshe, which we call the Torah or the Chumash. Why do we call that the Chumash, the Torah? Because this is Chumash is five, Chumash. Chumash is five, Chumash is five, and it has five books because Moshe, over the 40 years, God told them to write word for word for word for word, and it has exactly the amount of words, the letters, what's written, what's not, it's all godly. That is the five books of Moshe. What's your question?
Who wrote it in Bereshit? Because Moshe was not...
No, Moshe wrote from Bereshit. Hashem told him to write.
He was not existing.
Right. But when he was existing, after God gave the Torah, he said to him, write from Bereshit till...
Okay.
It's like God tell him, okay, now you're going to write what happened 2,000 years ago. Bereshit bara Elokim. Abraham was born, Moshe wrote, and he kept writing up to his piece, and then through the 40 years kept writing more and more, till before he passed away, he put 13 Torah scrolls that he wrote, and gave each tribe one scroll, and one he left in the Beit HaMikdash, and that's what we have till today, the Torah scroll. So for example, give an example. Tefillin. I was giving just a simple example. Who gave us the mitzvah of tefillin? Moshe. How do we know how to make tefillin? He showed us. He took a piece of skin of an animal. He made parchment, wrote the letters, showed us how to write it. Then he made a box from a skin of an animal and put four compartments for the head and one compartment for the hand. And then the straps was made. Moshe gave it to us because God gave him that clear instruction. This is how it should be. It wasn't a prophetic experience. It was a direct message.
There is a reason why he chose only Moses and no Yaakov?
Oh, why Moshe? I don't, you know, we don't know why God chose Moshe, but Moshe was chosen. Yeah?
Going back to before, if God can do anything, why not just give us the Torah himself? Why did he choose to have Moses as a...
He has a very good question. Why didn't God write it himself? Why did he need Moshe to be his hand? Guess what? I have the same question. And the answer is, there's no answer. God chose so. He wanted that it should be written through Moshe. However, the Ten Commandments that were engraved, you know, the Luchot, you know the Ten Commandments?
Right.
Who wrote it?
God,
Etz Melekim. So you see God, huh?
The tablets?
Yeah, yeah, the Ten Commandments.
The first set.
The second set also God inscribed. Moshe brought the stone, but God inscribed. So God, you're right, God could have wrote it. Guess what? God didn't have to send Moshe to talk to Paro to get the Jews out of Egypt. God could have done it himself, right? But God created the world in a system that there's a kind of, I call it, messengers, you know, like God's agents. And their job is to do different things. So let's say a doctor is an agent of God to heal. God doesn't need doctors. God could heal you without a doctor. And sometimes God heals you even though the doctor thinks they can heal. So God needs the doctor to heal. Some doctors think they talk of God. But God doesn't need it. But God created the world in that way. Doctors heal, lawyers sue, business people work. You know, and that's how God made it. God doesn't have to, that you have to go open up a store and make money. God can give you money in your account. All of a sudden you get every day $100,000 in your account. But God didn't do it like that. He made it into a system. And we'll soon see why. Why God decided to use us as agents. And one of the main reasons is because God wants us to be partners in the creation. It's not like he's doing everything. He brought the potential and then he wants us to develop it. So he made us partners in this creation. So you're a partner, you're a partner, you're a partner. Everyone, we're all partners. And each one does the part, and God is using you as his partner to bring whatever you could bring to the world that you are gifted with, that the world wants and needs from you. So you're a partner in God's creation. That's what God wants, us to work together with God. Make sense a little? So let's read text 3 about the five books of Moshe. Go.
Beyond prophecy.
Page 9.
Page 9.
Yeah.
God would speak to Moses face to face, as a man speaks to his fellow. If there be a prophet among you, I, God, will make myself known to them in a vision. I will speak to them in a dream. Not so is my servant Moses. In all my house he is trusted. Mouth to mouth I speak with him. In a vision and not in riddles, he gazes at the image of God. That's deep.
That's very deep. But that's a whole section that I could give a whole lection of how I don't understand it. But the point here is, Moshe's, it's a whole different level. You finished the whole section?
Yeah.
So that is the five books of we call it the five books of Moshe. Now let's go, the second section is called Nevi'im. What's Nevi'im? The prophets. That's the next section on page 10. How many prophets were there in the Jewish history till the destruction of the first temple? So the Torah says 48. And seven prophets, you know, the women, like Devorah, Esther, Abigail, you know, the seven prophets. Why? Because altogether, what we see in the prophets include all these 48 prophets that said prophecy in different sections of the prophets. However, here there's a change. It wasn't direct like Moshe. It was a vision that they visioned. Either it could be in a dream, it could be when in a sleep, it could be in a trance, as the Torah explains, when a prophet used to have a vision of God, he lost all his senses, or she lost all her senses of reality, and they didn't know if they, you know, if where they are, and they acted in a very strange way, and then they saw the vision of God in their mind, and then they were able to write that down. So it wasn't like Moshe, where it was direct, you know, word for word. It was a vision, and then they were able to interpret and write down the thing. Is that clear, that thing? So read the page on page 10, text 4.
The limits of prophecy.
You see it?
Yep.
Page 10.
Page 10 on the top.
Yeah.
48 prophets and 7 prophetesses prophesied to the people of Israel, and they neither subtracted from nor added to what is written in the Torah.
So what was their purpose? They didn't add any mitzvos except Purim and Hanukkah, you know. But nothing was added. Nothing was subtracted. They didn't change anything. And by the way, if any prophet comes and says, I just had a prophetic vision and now God told me to change something in the Torah of Moshe, the five books of Moshe, he's considered a false prophet. Because no one could change what was a direct message from God. So why do we need the prophets? What did they add to us?
An emphasis?
It didn't add any mitzvahs, any customs, any traditions, nothing. And the answer is?
An emphasis.
They basically encouraged us, inspired us to do what Moshe says in the Torah. So when Jews were worshipping idols during the first temple, the prophets used to come and tell them, if you're going to continue worshipping idols, God is going to kick you out of Israel. When the Jews were not behaving, so the prophets were more like inspirational, inspiring you to follow the Torah of Moshe. Not making anything new, and a lot of ethics. You know, how to behave, how to be a good person, you know. So the prophets, but there's nothing legal law in the prophets that was added or subtracted from the Torah. It's basically a time period where God revealed himself to these 48 prophets and the 7 prophetesses because to inspire us to be connected to God and to follow what God says in the Torah. Is that clear? Any question?
I mean, I think that we needed the prophets and we still need them because we could relate to them. In other words,
well, people could relate to Moshe.
Yeah, but the prophets were more closer to a regular human being. So, you know,
Moshe was also a human being.
Yeah, but it gave us the hope and the ability to say, oh, you know, I can do that, I can choose to do that, because that person who's telling me what we should do is more like me than Moshe is, you know. It gives me a possibility to obey.
Well, I mean, a prophet was a holy Jew also.
Yeah.
The Rambam says all the criteria to become a prophet, you know, it's pretty extensive, you know. It's a person that controls their you know, their character. They're always in control, never get angry, and never do anything wrong of the Torah, always follow everything, very wide mind, has deep and very wide understanding of the whole vast worlds and spirituality. So they're very high level, but you know, that's it.
The Rebbetzin makes a great point, and to that point, I think it's also relevance, right? Prophets appeared in certain times where it was relevant to repeat that.
And what's with today?
That's the point. Where? What about today?
Okay, we'll get to it later.
Yeah.
Now goes the third section. So we got Torah, prophets, and then
Ketuvim
writings. What is the difference? What is Ketuvim? So this is called a very interesting thing called Ruach HaKodesh. Listen to what this is. When King Solomon, Shlomo HaMelech, wrote Mishlei, Proverbs, or when King Shlomo HaMelech wrote Shir HaShirim, it wasn't a vision of God that entered his mind and he experienced it and then wrote it. It's Ruach HaKodesh, it's a lower level. What does Ruach HaKodesh mean? His mind was connected to a higher level of understanding. So whatever he wrote, so even though it wasn't a prophetic vision that went into his mind to write, but his mind was connected to the wisdom of God in the spiritual worlds. So whatever he wrote was God's wisdom. You know, God didn't tell him, like Moshe, didn't show him a vision, but his mind was connected to a much higher level of understanding that reached the understanding of Atzilut, which is the spiritual world. So when he writes, it's godliness. That's called Ruach HaKodesh. So let's say Rashi. I'm giving an example. Rashi or Rambam. When they wrote Rashi on the Chumash, which was 900 years ago, the Rambam 850 years ago, it wasn't like a guy sitting around the table and says, you know what, I don't understand what this verse is saying. Let me write my interpretation. You know what I mean? No, they connected their mind to a higher godly level of understanding, which is called Chachma of Atzilut, the wisdom of the world of Atzilut. So it's called Ruach HaKodesh. They had a spiritual understanding in their mind. So when they wrote, it was godly words that were put in that they wrote in their own language, but it was it looked through their godly lens of their mind. And they came up with these words. So for example, when people used to come to the Rebbe, I'm just giving an example, and ask them a question, and he gave an answer, they asked the Rebbe once, how do you know what to answer? Everyone, you answer a different answer. Like, he says, whatever my mind comes up first, that's the answer. Meaning, whatever enters in my mind, their mind was connected to a higher level of godliness, so what they wrote was godly explanations in the Torah. When me and you write something, it's our own boich svara. Boich svara means it's our own belly ache. Something to say, meaning we decided this is a good thing. It's not a godly, but when the prophets, when Shlomo HaMelech and Esther wrote the Megillah, it was their mind was connected to godliness, and therefore what they wrote was a godly message. But it's a lower level than prophecy. So that's why it's divided in three, the five books of Moshe, the prophets, and the writings. So read text 5.
The divine spirit. The person feels as if something has come upon them, and as if they have received a new power that drives them to speak. They speak words of wisdom, or compose hymns, or exhort their fellows with useful advice, or discourse on matters of communal leadership or theology. All this while they are awake and in the full possession of their senses. Such a person is said to speak by Ruach HaKodesh. It was through this kind of divine inspiration that David composed the Psalms and Solomon composed the books of Proverbs. What's this?
Ecclesiastes.
Kehelet.
Kehelet, okay. Thank you. And the Songs of Psalms. Also Daniel, Job, Chronicles, and the rest of the writings were written in this manner. In reference to such Ruach HaKodesh, David says, "The Spirit of God spoke in me, and His word is on my tongue." The Spirit of God caused him to speak these words.
Okay, so now that we understand Tanakh, Torah, Nevi'im, Ksuvim, the three different categories, now let's just conclude with the oral Torah, Mishnah and Talmud. We're not going to get in deep, just to connect it. Is the oral Torah Torah, or is the oral Torah not Torah? What do you say? Is oral Torah Torah or no?
No.
What do you say?
Don't know.
Mishnah, Talmud, Medrash, is it Torah or no?
Yes.
Yes?
No.
No?
No.
No?
Don't know.
You don't know? That's good if you don't know.
Yes.
No? So we have conflicting places that one place it says that any part of Torah, whether it's Talmud, Medrash, whatever, anything that anyone is ever going to develop in Torah was already given to Moshe on Mount Sinai.
Oh, yeah,
so what Rashi wrote, what the Talmud wrote, what the Rambam wrote, it was already taught, Moshe already got it on Mount Sinai. We're just revealing and developing what was already given. Text 6, read quickly text 6. I'm just going to read the conflict, you know, one place that it says and one says that. Text 6, page 12.
Sure. Scripture, Mishra, Talmud, and Haggadah, even what a proficient student is destined to innovate, were already said to Moses at Sinai.
So that means it was already said. So then the Mishnah is just like, almost like just revealing everything that's already said. But then we read in another text, in text 7. Okay, read text 7. On the day?
On that day, Rabbi Eliezer brought them all sorts of proofs that they were rejected. So he said to them, "If the law is as I say, this water channel will prove it. The water channel began flowing backward." Said they to him, "One does not cite a logic proof from a water channel." Rabbi Eliezer then said to them, "If the law is as I say, the walls of the study hall will prove it."
They had an argument in the yeshiva, who's right in the law of the Talmud. Rabbi Eliezer says, "I'm right." And they were arguing a major debate, and he says, "You know what, I'll prove it. If the water goes backwards, that means I'm right. If the walls fall down, I'm right." You know, he was trying to prove that he's right in the law. And that's how they used to argue. Not with fist fights, but that the water goes backwards, the walls fall down. So what does he go further?
The walls of the study hall leaned in and began to fall. Rabbi Yeshua scolded the walls. "If the Torah scholars are contending with each other in matters of the Torah law, what is the nature of your involvement?"
Get out of here, walls. Don't fall down. We're arguing. Why are you mixing in?
Yeah,
so the walls said, "Okay, we're going to stop. You know, okay, we listen to you." These are holy Jews that are arguing here. It's not like me and you. We argue, the walls don't even know that we're arguing. Here the walls were shaking when they were arguing. I mean, the neighbors know you're arguing, but not the walls, yeah? Next.
And the walls did not fall out of deference to Rabbi Yeshua, and neither did they straighten out of deference to Rabbi Eliezer. They still remained leaning. Rabbi Eliezer then said to them, "If the law is as I say, let it be proven from heaven." There then issued a heavenly voice, which proclaimed, "What do you want of Rabbi Eliezer? The law is as he says." Rabbi Yeshua stood on his feet and said, "The Torah is not in heaven." What is the meaning of the statement, "Is it not in heaven?" "Oh, it is not in heaven," said Rabbi Yirmiyah. "As the Torah has already been given at Mount Sinai, we take no notice of heavenly voices. For you, God, have already written in the Torah at Mount Sinai. Follow the majority."
So what does it sound from here? That the Talmud and the Oral Torah is all made by the rabbis. It's not from Mount Sinai. And when the voice of heaven said the law is like Rabbi Eliezer, he said, "I'm sorry, we don't listen to God now. We're arguing, we're going to decide, the majority rules, and whatever the majority says, that's going to be the law." So that means from this text it comes out that it wasn't given by Moshe at Mount Sinai. The rabbis are developing the law, and they could decide what it should be according to the majority. So was it given everything by Moshe, or was the rabbis made this?
Both.
How could it be both? How? Okay. And not only that, guess what? If Elijah the prophet, Eliyahu HaNavi, comes right now and says, "I just got a law from God that when you wrap tefillin, you shouldn't wrap it 7 times around your arm, you should only do 6 times. God just told me." Do we listen to him?
No.
Torah says no.
False prophet, right?
Because once the Torah was given down here, the sages decide what the law is according to the majority. So that means we're deciding, not God. So what's going on here? So, I'll tell you an interesting thing. Yeah?
So, but we said that we're deciding. If God already knows everything that's going to happen in the future, how are we deciding? Because it's already pre-planned.
So you're saying a free choice. How do we decide? Yeah? But do we know what God knows?
Nope.
So for us, it's as if, you understand what I'm saying? The fact that God knows doesn't have any effect on me. God knows, his knowing has no bearing on my action. It's like someone knowing something from across the world, you know. So if you turn to page 18, look at page 18. You have 18? I'm going to give you a biology lesson about DNA. Anyone know what DNA is or no? DNA is like the
building blocks,
the beginning of something, and then it develops into, you know. So if I take the DNA of a person, I don't have the whole person, but from this DNA it could come and develop until you have a whole mensch, you know what I'm saying? So DNA is like the potential, you understand? Or let's give another example. You take a egg of a mother and a sperm of a father, and it's in the mother's womb. So in the womb it develops and develops and develops till you have a whole mensch. So, the idea of the written Torah that Moshe gave us is like the DNA. It's like the beginning of the seed, you know, the embryo hitting the, you know. And then the sages are the womb, you know, the womb, where it starts to, they develop it. But it's all based on this DNA that has everything there in a potential. And as it starts developing through the mind of the sages, then you're developing more and more of what the DNA had coded in the potential of the DNA. So the entire Talmud, how many books do we see? 120,000 books of oral Torah, 120,000, was all in the DNA of the written Torah. But it wasn't yet developed and brought out till it was in the minds of the sages, and every sage brought out another piece, and it's still being developed. Now, why did God do it like that? Why didn't God just give us the 120,000 books at Mount Sinai? It says, here's the Talmud, here's the Rashi, here's the Rambam, it's all done. Because God wanted the humans to develop God's Torah. He wanted us to be partners in it. And what's very strange, I don't know if you notice it, if you go for 1 minute to page 23. Just 1 minute to page 23, okay? You see page 23? It says, we're going to read it in a few weeks in the Torah, it says, God said the Ten Commandments. You know, the voice of God, everyone heard the Ten Commandments. It was a loud voice, v'lo yasaf. What does v'lo yasaf mean? It has two interpretations. Either it didn't continue, that means this loud voice of the Ten Commandments, Mount Sinai, was just for then. Another interpretation is it didn't stop. That voice is still going on. So when God said the Ten Commandments, that voice is still there. That voice never stopped. How could that be? Do you hear the Ten Commandments? Do you hear the Ten Commandments? Do you hear the Ten Commandments now that God said? And the answer is, you know why the voice never stopped? Because as the generations are continuing to learn the Torah, the oral Torah, we are now developing more and more of that voice. Because that voice was the DNA that started everything. It was like the potential that's in the sperm and in the egg that didn't yet develop. So every day when we learn, the sages are learning Torah, and we're all learning Torah, we are continuing to develop that voice that's still continuing through us studying. So when Rashi learned the Torah, he brought out the voice of God at Mount Sinai in the Rashi. When Rambam wrote his law, he wrote out the voice of God that was on Mount Sinai. He brought it into the law. Because that voice is still there. It's just being developed by the humans because God wants us to be partners in the creation of God's world and creation of the Torah. So the voice that was said, the Torah at Mount Sinai, the Ten Commandments, doesn't stop. It continues to keep on going and going and going, and it's always going to keep going because we're going to develop more and more and more and more. And guess what? The little secret. When Mashiach will come, all these 120,000 books that you see here is compared to what we're going to develop in the Torah then is compared like Hevel. You know what Hevel is? Hevel. Like nothingness compared to what we're going to develop in the Torah. So this is just a little taste of how the infinite mind of God is still being developed. Because don't forget one thing, people forget, God is infinite. And even more than that, God created infinity. So Bli Gvul and Gvul, which is infinite and finite, God creates, that means God is above it. And the Torah is a piece of God. So Torah has no end, literally. Every letter in Torah, in the written Torah, has so much in it. As the Arizal said, that every word in Torah has 600,000 levels of understanding. 600,000, every word. How much do we have today? Six levels, Rashi, Rambam, Medrash, as we'll soon see. So it's really interesting. So we're still developing it. And it's going to continue. So when you learn, and you learn, and all of us learning, we always say, oh, that's a nice idea. You know, maybe this is what... Yeah, everyone, as long as you're not breaking the foundation of the DNA, you could develop. That's a very important thing. The DNA, you can't take apart. Once you take that apart, then there's no Torah. Then it's your own mind. So all the sages that develop Torah always follow the DNA, meaning the foundation, the principles, the laws of how to develop. You can't just decide, I'm going to develop the Torah my way. There's a way in the Torah how the DNA is developed. Does it make sense a little? Okay, so let's just read two things here, and then we'll conclude the lesson for tonight. I know there's a lot to read, but you could take it home. You have the book. But I'm giving you a little DNA, what you could learn tonight until next week to develop more. So now, something very interesting. If you read the written Torah, let's say the five books of Moshe, you read it in Hebrew or English, and you don't understand a word you're saying. You're just reading, Vayidaber Adonai El Moshe Lema, Shema Yisrael Adonai Eloheinu Adonai. You don't know what you're saying. You get a mitzvah of learning Torah. But when you learn the oral Torah, like Talmud, Mishnah, Rashi, if you don't understand what you're saying, you didn't do anything. You didn't learn anything. Because the oral Torah is your understanding. It's you. The written Torah is God's words. The oral Torah is you developing it. So you have to understand what you're reading. If you don't understand, you didn't read Torah. The written Torah, the words are God. So as long as I say the words, even if I don't understand it, I'm saying God's words. The oral Torah is me developing it. So I have to understand what I'm saying. So if I learn Rambam, and I read one law and I don't understand, I didn't learn. If I read the Chumash or the Tehillim and I don't understand, I read Torah. I read God's words.
And if you read Rashi's interpretation of the Chumash, you're good?
Excellent. As long as you understand it.
As long as you understand it.
Yeah, if you don't understand it, that's nothing.
It's nothing.
Good. Interesting. You have to understand it.
So you get double.
Yeah. The point is, if you don't understand it, then you didn't develop it. So basically, the written Torah is divine revelation, and the oral Torah is the human vehicle how to reveal the divine revelation. So let's just read text 11 on page 21.
Excellent.
Yeah.
With the written Torah, a person says the blessing on the Torah and they read it, even if they don't understand what they're saying. With the oral Torah, however, a person cannot say the blessing unless they understand what they're saying. For as regards to the oral Torah, learning entails human understanding.
Go to page 23. Very important text. Say, in the blessing.
In the blessing recited before studying Torah, we say, blessed are you, God, who gives the Torah. In truth, God has already given us the Torah at Mount Sinai, yet he still gives the Torah perpetually. This matter requires some elaboration. The Torah says, these words God spoke to your entire assembly at the mountain, a great voice that did not cease. Rashi explains the meaning of the word did not cease, velo yosef, in accordance with the translation by Unkelos. It did not stop, for it is a powerful voice that endures forever. Rashi also offers a second interpretation of the word velo yosef. It did not anymore. Example, that God did not again speak so openly and publicly as he did at Sinai. There's a profound significance in these two interpretations, as they are simultaneously true. The divine voice spoke the Torah at Sinai and did not anymore. As all the subsequent laws and edicts instituted by the sages throughout the generations were not explicitly commanded by God at the time. At the same time, it did not cease, for everything was included in potential form within that voice. It is only that For everything there is a time and season, and the time has not yet come for the potential to emerge into actuality, as that depends on the initiative of those down here below, in accordance with their nature and their abilities, and in accordance with the qualities of the souls of each generation. The sages of each generation were then roused to actualize from that potential in accordance with the time and season. Thus, the sages did not invent anything from their own minds, God forbid, but rather actualized the divine intent.
Got it? So Rashi didn't develop anything on his own. He just brought out what was already there in potential. So did Moshe learn Rashi? No. Did Moshe learn Talmud? No. Did Moshe learn Rambam? No. But he gave us the
tools,
the DNA, the embryo, the egg, that we could develop the Rambam. So he got everything at Mount Sinai. What do you mean he got everything at Mount Sinai? It was all there in a DNA. It's all there. And then here, take it and develop what's there. It has everything that the Rambam is going to say. It has it in this DNA. It just has to bring it out. You getting what I'm saying? So when you say Moshe got everything at Mount Sinai, he didn't study Rambam. But he got where the Rambam developed it, the DNA for the Rambam to develop everything that's there from here. So it's not a contradiction. He got the whole Torah in this form of, we call it the code, DNA, the potential. So it's all there. And then the Rambam brings out one piece, Rashi brings out another piece, Shulchan Aruch brings out another, Kabbalah brings out another, mysticism another, Hasidus another, and that's how you get it. But it's all from that DNA embryo. Make sense? So Moshe got everything. Did he learn everything? No, he didn't learn Rambam. Rambam didn't yet develop the Rambam. But Moshe got the Rambam in the sense of it's in the DNA that the potential of the Rambam to come out.
But isn't that
so? He didn't have the mitzvah.
Which mitzvah?
Moshe, of Rambam, to start to understand.
Ah. Well, it's funny that Moshe, this is something people don't know. When did the oral Torah start? The written Torah Moshe gave us. But when did we start with the oral? Who started?
Hanasi?
No, he wrote it down. But when did we start learning oral Torah orally?
All along, when we were speaking it.
So when Moshe came and gave us the Torah, he also taught us the oral Torah. So for example, give you one example on text 13. Take text 13 and then we'll end with this text. Moshe said in the Ten Commandments what? Remember the day of Shabbos to make it holy. 6 days a week you do your work, and the seventh day is a God for Hashem. That was the written words. That's it. But what does it mean not to work on Shabbos? Doesn't say anything in the written Torah. Doesn't say. It just says don't do work. Well, what does work mean? Walking a mile is work. Walking 2 miles to shul is work. Walking 4 miles to shul is work. Drive is easier. There's no work. So this is what Moshe, after he gave the Ten Commandments, he says, guys, listen carefully. This is the code. This is the DNA. Now let me define to you what work means. And I'll develop and I'll teach you all the 39 primary work that you cannot do on Shabbos, and from there comes everything you can do on Shabbos. And he taught it to them orally. So the oral Torah started with Moshe, because they didn't know how to do Shabbos. I tell you, don't work. What does it mean? So Moshe taught them the 39 things. In the Talmud and the Mishnah, counts each one of the 39. And then from the 39, the derivatives. That means what comes out of that. From each one of the 39, you have another 100. And then you have three big volumes of Talmud all on Shabbos. which about 1,000 pages just on Shabbos, right? But it was all one sentence in the written Torah. One word, don't work. And we don't know what that means. So Moshe already started the oral thing. One more thing. Tie a sign on your hand and a reminder between your eyes. That's it, it says in the written Torah. This is the that's the DNA. What does that mean? Is it potato chips? I put a potato. What do I do on my hands? Potatoes? Latkes? What do I put on my head? Doesn't say a word. But Moshe orally took, and he said, listen guys, I'm going to teach you. Take a piece of skin like this, make it square. If it's not square, it's not kosher. Make sure it's black with kosher paint that's made from kosher, seva. What is it, seva? Kosher ingredients. What's kosher ingredients? Like green. Ink that grows from the ground. And it gives all the laws, but that's orally. So Moshe already taught them. It says, sit in a sukkah. That's it. What does a sukkah mean? Is it my house, my porch? Do I have to build walls with tzchach? Who came up with tzchach? I mean, what a crazy thing, sit in the rain with tzchach in your soup. What is it? Yeah, Moshe taught them orally. You get what I'm saying? So the oral Torah started right away. Because if not, you can't do anything. In the written Torah is just a code, one word. Tie a sign on your hand and a reminder between your eyes, and you have 20 volumes of what that means. That was orally. You following a little what I'm trying to say? It makes sense? So basically today, that voice is still continuing. Because when we're learning, we could develop and see new things. And every Jew has a piece of the Torah that they need to develop. And the Torah is waiting for you, you Rebbetzin, to bring out that piece of the Torah that was hidden till now. V'sein chalkenu v'torah secha. Please give us the part of the Torah that belongs to us that we need to develop. And everyone has a little piece that they could add and bring and develop and reveal what's already in the Torah. What did you want to ask?
It's a little bit of an off-topic question, but if Moses never committed any sins, why did similar souls like him continue to come?
I can't hear.
Moshe never committed any sins, right?
Yeah.
Why did people like the Rambam and stuff like that come with the same soul?
Why his soul came back again, you mean? That's a separate class. Well, he wants to know why Moshe's soul came. In every generation there's a Moshe. But Moshe is not here for himself. Moshe is here for us. He doesn't have to correct himself. He has to help us become. Anyways, I want to just thank you all for joining our course today. I just want to mention that these lessons that we're learning, I know it sounds from the topic book smart, but it has a lot of importance. Push it to understand what is this Torah, what is Torah, what's not Torah. We're going to actually learn some texts of Kabbalah, Mishnah, to show you what it is. I'm going to learn it with you and show you which is the written, which is the oral, which is Kabbalah, which so you'll see how it develops the DNA to these pieces. And then you see it's all from the same Moshe, from the same God. There's no other religion that has this. No one. No one has 120,000 books on one book. And still developing. Yeah?
Can you just explain again before we finish up? What exactly is a Haftorah now?
Oh, Haftorah. You know what Haftorah is or no?
Yeah, it's from the... You said it was from...
The prophets.
The prophets.
So, what... No. The Torah... I know it's confusing, but Torah, the five books of Moshe, then there is the prophets. So the Haftorah is pieces of the prophets that connect to the Torah of the five books of Moshe. So they read every Shabbos another section of the prophets that fit to the parsha of that week. You following me a little? Or
how do they decide which?
The prophets decided that there was a certain period of time that the Romans didn't let them read Torah in the synagogues or at all. But prophets, they let them. So they took pieces of prophecies that connect to the portion of that week, and then they read that, and that became a Haftorah. Haftorah is like dessert. So after you read, you know, it's like when you give a meal, you have a dessert, that's called Haftorah.
But it's the same meaning of the same week or shock.
It connects. Sometimes it's hard to see the connection. And sometimes, like the parsha where it speaks that Sarah gave birth to her first son, and she didn't have children for 90 years, right? So we have a whole story of a lady in the time of Elijah, Eliyahu HaNavi, didn't have children, and Elisha, and he blessed them with children. So you have the same idea of someone didn't have a child, had a child, and then you have in the time of the prophecies the same. You getting what I'm saying? So it's similar to each other. It has a similarity to each other. So you get it? So the prophets is what we read for the Haftorah. But it's not the five books of Moshe, which is the Torah, but it's the prophecies, that's the prophets, the other 19 books. May it make sense? And Purim we read from the writings. Story of Esther. It's also written. It's Tanakh. But it's not the Torah. It's already writings that the sages in the time of Esther wrote the story of Purim with divine inspiration. And that's called the Megillat Esther. But it's one of the 24 books. So the five books of Moshe is one category. Prophets second. Writings third. But altogether it's 24.
But if you add it up here, it's 24 just for the Torah and the prophets.
Oh, not with the other one?
Not with the writings. This comes to 20.
Is 19 the prophet?
How much is 19 and 5?
24.
Why, you have more?
Well, I'm just looking at this figure. Yeah.
Which page?
Page 7.
No, it's more than 24?
No, it's 24. 24.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. Ah, she has a good question. You see on page 7, you see Trei Asar?
Yeah.
Which is 12, Hosea, Yoel, you see that?
No, that's what I was thinking.
That's considered one book.
All of that is one book?
Yeah.
That's a reading.
It's a hefty book.
No, but by the way, these are very small books. Like, you ever read this story of Jonah with the fish?
Yeah, very short.
It's four chapters. It's like a few pages.
Oh, so
it's one of the 12.
So what's the name of the one book that
this? Trei Asar.
That's the name of it?
Yeah, 12. Trei Asar is Aramaic for 12. So in Hebrew you say Shneim Asar. In Aramaic you say Trei Asar. Trei is 2, Asar is 10. So Trei Asar is 12. So the 12 books is one.
Okay.
So now if you count, we have...
Yeah.
It makes sense now?
Now it does.
She had a good point. You see that? Because if you count the 12, you have another 12.
Right.
I mean another 11 plus, yeah. So yeah, those 12 is one.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Thank you all for joining. I want to welcome our dear